And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson.
The 2024 Indiana General Assembly concluded on March 8th with 172 bills being sent to Governor Eric Holcomb for his signature. Legislators passed bills addressing child care access and affordability, along with priority legislation to address low reading test scores for third-grade Hoosiers. Overall, policymakers largely stayed true to their stated desire to keep a low profile in the midst of what will be a very busy election year. Joining us now to share her take on the session is the President of the Indiana Senate, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch. Thank you so much for joining us here on Regionally Speaking.
It's always good to be with you, Dee, and good people up in Northwest Indiana.
Lieutenant Governor, as I shared in my opening, the 2024 Indiana legislative session was a short one. It's a non-budget year, and with that, legislative leaders tend to sidestep most ideas with a price tag. And for this year, that does include certain measures relating to Medicaid, education, taxes, and infrastructure until next year's longer budget building session. Now, I want to get into a few bills of interest shortly, but can you give us an overall assessment of how the session went from your view as the president of the Indiana Senate?
Well, thank you, Dee. And this just finished my eighth year as president of the Senate. So when the Senate's in session, I run the Senate. And I will tell you this, that out of all 8 years, this was probably the most collaborative, bipartisan session that I participated in. There was no drama. People worked together across the aisle. That's the way it's supposed to work. There wasn't any, you know, big controversy. People were very respectful. And at the end of the day, we passed some good legislation. You know, it was interesting because 752 bills were actually introduced at the beginning of the session, which was the beginning, January 8th. And 172 were actually passed, 171 were signed by the governor. And so next year will be a budget year. It'll be a long session. There'll be a lot more probably controversy because we'll be talking about how we're going to be spending Hoosiers' money.
You know, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, I find it quite refreshing that you shared that this session was the most collaborative that you can remember to date, that it was free of drama, and that everybody just came together to work for the greater good of all Hoosiers. And I say that it's refreshing, and I've shared this on air before. At the conclusion of the 2023 legislative session, I had the opportunity to speak to many policymakers from the region, and I noted this recurring theme with each person that I spoke to, be it a Republican or a Democrat, but they all said the same thing. There was this recurring theme of everybody working together, everybody coming together for the greater good of all Hoosiers. And so I just wanted to, again, reiterate that I find it refreshing that that theme continues, especially in light of hearing stories from around the country and even in D.C. You don't hear those same stories. And so I just wanted to say that I think that it's wonderful that policymakers are able to set party aside for the greater good of all Hoosiers.
Absolutely. And that's the way it's supposed to work, Dee.
Let's take a deeper dive into a few of the bills that did, in fact, pass this legislative session. And I want to start with Senate Bill 256, Fiscal Matters, now Public Law 123. Lieutenant Governor, for our last conversation, I was fortunate enough to have you join me in studio as you were in the region for another engagement. And at the time, we spoke about how you were advocating for more transparency as well as an audit of the FSSA. With that request coming on the heels of the announcement that the Medicaid program faced a $1 billion shortfall that could hurt families with medically complex children. Please take a moment to share with our listening audience how the legislature passed two limited measures to provide additional oversight.
Well, absolutely. And just to give a little background, back in December of 2023, the Family and Social Services Administration, or FSSA, revealed to the Budget Committee that they had a $1 billion shortfall in their budgeting projections. And of course, they were proposing at the time that one of the ways they would make up for that shortfall was to cut the funding to parents who care for their severely disabled, medically complex children. I'm talking about children who are nonverbal, children who cannot care for themselves, children who have tracheotomies, ventilators, feed tubes, requiring 24/7 care. And at the time, as the chair of the Intellectual and Developmental Disability Task Force, I called an emergency meeting of the IDD Task Force to ask FSSA the questions that parents were asking us about how they're going to be able to provide care. And quite honestly, they could not answer questions. And this is a program that will impact these parents that takes place July 1 of this year. So in light of that, then I, as chair of that task force, called for the governor and called for FSSA to pause the program. And when that didn't appear that it was going to happen, then I called for an independent audit of FSSA and called upon the General Assembly to be able to help provide accountability and transparency for these parents. And so there was a lot of, you know, back and forth that took place during the session. Mm-hmm. Originally, FSSA's budget bill, or their bill, every session agencies have their kind of agency bill where they put in requests and put in language that will help them do their job better. Their bill was killed because it had amendments on it to require more transparency and accountability of FSSA. And so, you know, there was then language that was put in place into one bill, which was House and Road Act 1120, that actually was requiring FSSA to establish a minimum percentage of reimbursement for these families, also to provide information regarding the transition, plans to be able to explain how the error happened and how they're going to provide more transparency. That language all was stripped out. And ultimately, they put it in another bill, 256, and that removed the FSSA transparency language, and it removed language that included a sales tax exemption for feminine hygiene products. And so those were some of the language that actually was removed from Senate and Road Act 256. My point is, at the end of the day, when it came to this matter, the only thing that was passed was that FSSA should explain how they're going to allow this not to happen or to keep this from happening in the future. And then, you know, they would try to figure out how much money the parents could get and how much money providers could keep in the future. And so I was disappointed. I certainly was glad that the General Assembly did something to help the situation, but I believe they could have done a whole lot more. And unfortunately, that's where we're at. But Dee, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Now we're finding out that the seniors, you know, the area agencies on aging, who are responsible for helping seniors with Meals on Wheels and activities at their community centers to be able to help Hoosiers who are elderly stay in their homes and be independent. Now to try to help make up for that shortfall, they're trying to cut the funding to those agencies, which will impact the amount of services they can provide seniors who are trying to age with dignity and respect in their homes.
Wow.
So this saga just continues. And then last week I met with nursing home representatives who said that they're also cutting the funding to those long-term health care facilities for seniors to try to move them out of those facilities and move them home, which everyone wants. But then if we move them home and we've cut the services that we can provide to them while they're in their homes,
right,
we're really setting them up for failure. So this $1 billion shortfall is impacting Hoosiers all over Indiana, not just the disabled who have complex medical needs, but also seniors who are in long-term facilities or seniors who are trying to age with dignity and respect in their own homes.
Lieutenant Governor Crouch, thank you for drilling down on how the payment structure could have a devastating effect on Hoosier families with medically complex kids, but also your insight into the domino effect that the Medicaid shortfall could have on one of our most vulnerable population, our seniors. That's why it is so important for us here at Lakeshore Public Media to have you join us on Regionally Speaking to help break down, to unpack, to help us to understand the decisions that are being made on our behalf at the State House.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Now, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, I don't want anybody to miss this because you said something else that I think kind of went under the radar. You spoke a little bit about how language was slipped in and there were some things regarding feminine hygiene. Now, I want to talk about it because I feel like that went under the radar. And I want to talk about that language that was added by GOP Representative Peggy Mayfield to exempt menstrual products from taxation, also known as the Tampax tax. Now, as the session closed March 8th, as you shared, lawmakers stripped it from the bill proposal. If you don't mind, can you kind of give an overview of what the proposed tampon tax is and what that would have meant for females across the Hoosier state?
Well, there was a proposal to remove the sales tax and to provide a sales tax exemption for feminine hygiene products. And so that was something that was viewed by Representative Mayfield and others as being able to give a break to those women who have to purchase those products, you know, on a monthly basis. And so it was a way to recognize and to be able to help women in general. And so that language, of course, was removed from the bill. But I suspect the reason it was probably removed, quite honestly, was because it would have a fiscal impact on the budget. And I expect that next year, when it is a budget year, we're going to see that language come back. And that would really be when that should be considered. So oftentimes, representatives or senators will introduce language in the short session that they know perhaps isn't going to get passed because it has a fiscal impact to it, but they want the conversation to be out there so that people to be aware so that next year, when they come back and try to put it in the budget during the long session, that people already will be familiar and be engaged with it. Does that make sense?
That makes absolutely perfect sense, and it gives you a preview and it gets you motivated to do your homework, to do your research, to see how it could affect not only women Hoosiers, but everybody in the state. And so I thank you for sharing that view with me. Lieutenant Governor Crouch, let's discuss another agenda item that was a priority for both chambers this session, and that is Senate Bill 1, also known as Reading Skills. What will this new law mean for our third grade Hoosier students?
Yes, well, what we know is that if a child can't read by the third grade, they're going to struggle through school and they're going to struggle through life. And so it's absolutely critical that children read by the third grade. And so what Senate Enrolled Act 1 does is that it actually tests children in the second grade to kind of determine who's going to need additional help. And then we can focus on mediation for those students that are struggling in the second grade to prepare them to be able to pass the iLearn 3 in the third grade, because we want them to be successful. And we know that to be successful, they have to read. Now, the bill does provide that if you can't read by the third grade, you will be held back. And we don't want to hold children back, because that in and of itself impacts a child when they can't move forward with their peers. And so it's really a delicate balance, Dee. We want children to be able to read. We want them to be able to move forward with their peers. So it'll be, to me, the real challenge is going to be to determine who those children are in second grade that need extra help and then get it to them so that they can be successful and they can move on with their peers and move forward in the school year and move forward to the next grade.
Absolutely. We are rooting for all of our Hoosier students. And I just want to point out that's where early childhood learning across the Hoosier state, where that also plays a pivotal role in ensuring that all of our Hoosier students are able to read at their grade level. Now, I want to pivot from the session for just a few minutes. On Monday, April the 1st, you held a critical listening session in Andrews focusing on the town's ongoing battle over harmful contaminants being dumped into their groundwater, causing decades of challenges for citizens. Now, in the past, we have heard concerns from many communities across the United States, including right here in Northwest Indiana, around contaminated water issues due to aging infrastructure. What did you learn during this listening session that you held earlier this week?
Well, it was April Fool's Day, which, you know, was also my wedding anniversary, Dee.
Oh, happy anniversary.
So it was, thank you. It was good to be spending the time with the good people in Andrews. And that really, I wasn't aware of the situation there in Andrews, but what basically happened is RTX was a company that 30 years plus ago contaminated the water supply by dumping chemicals into the ground and, you know, into the pit that they were putting it. And those chemicals mm-hmm. now have seeped into some of the wells there in Andrews County, in Andrews, Indiana, and has also seeped into the ground and now is being found in ground level, in dangerous levels throughout the city itself. And so, of course, you know, what has happened is that now they're testing the water that the residents drink. And while there is what they call a stripper that RTX has put in place to be able to kind of filter out those contaminants, it doesn't filter all of them out. And so what the problem and the challenge is that this chemical that causes cancer, trichloromethylamine, that has actually been determined to be in the water, but at acceptable levels. And so the water has been determined to be drinkable, yet who wants to drink water that they know that cancer-causing chemicals are in, even if they're at an acceptable level? Does that make sense? I mean, I know if someone told me that cancer-causing chemicals was in the water I was drinking, I wouldn't want to be drinking that water. Even if they said, but don't worry about it, it's at an acceptable level. I think what this whole issue pointed out to me is that Indiana has a lot of work to do in terms of developing a statewide water plan that actually determines where our water assets are. Because we've seen down in Lebanon in the Leap District how that lack of a statewide water plan that actually inventories our assets, water assets around Indiana has caused a lot of controversy. But at the same time, what Andrews points out is that a lot of the water in Indiana needs to be improved upon the quality. So we have a lot of work to do, and we need a statewide plan that looks at the quantity of water that we have here in Indiana and where it is, but then the quality of water, because Hoosiers deserve good quality water. See, one of the challenges in Andrews, and it's a challenge we have all over Indiana, is that infrastructure that carries our water from the plants to the homes and the businesses, that infrastructure is aging. And in Andrews, it's so old and it leaks so bad that they have estimated that they lose 46% of the water that is pumped out of the water station on its way to the homes and businesses. 46% of it is lost due to aging infrastructure that leaks. So we have a real challenge ahead of us in Indiana in terms of being able to not only inventory our infrastructure, but then our plan to replace that aging infrastructure, because it impacts the quality of life that Hoosiers enjoy. So it was a very informative session for me, and points out how we really truly need a statewide water plan that inventories our assets, but also the quality of water that we have. And then we need to determine an action plan to address the aging infrastructure that we have here in Indiana.
And finally, in your role as Lieutenant Governor, you serve as the President of the Indiana Senate. But what many people may not realize is that included in your many responsibilities, you lead four agencies, but you also work hard to build relationships, not only across the aisle, but also across the state, serving as an advocate and an ambassador for the administration in which you serve. The last day of the 2024 Indiana legislative session was about a month ago, and you will be on the road for some time speaking directly to and with Hoosiers. And I understand that you will gather together community leaders and educators, hosting a mental health summit that will address and focus on learning about and creating change in regards to the mental health crisis that Indiana youth are facing right now.
you've hit upon something that is near and dear to my heart and very important to Hoosiers all over Indiana, and that is helping those that struggle with mental illness and addiction. Since COVID, we've seen a 20% increase in anxiety and depression among our population. But with our young people, we have seen a 60% increase in anxiety and depression. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among young people, and they are the future of Indiana. And that is why with our mental health summit in June, we are putting an emphasis and a focus on how do we help young people be able to deal with the stresses and the anxiety that they are encountering every single day in their lives. It's why when we move forward as a state, if we ever find ourselves in a situation as we did in COVID, in the future, we can't have mask mandates or lockdowns because of what it has done to all of us, but particularly to our young people. And it's what the Indiana Mental Health Roundtable is focused on. It is one of the things we'll be addressing, and it is actually the main thing we'll be addressing in our mental health summit in June, is how do we get help to our young people so that they can have happy, successful lives, and we don't lose any Hoosier at any age, because it's about hope and about compassion and it's about saving lives.
Before I let you go, in the minute or so that we have left, Lieutenant Governor, are there any other priorities that you will be focused on as you crisscross the state?
Well, you know, broadband is always a big deal. And, you know, I visited the Gary Smart Fiber House there last summer, and the great things you're doing to connect Hoosiers up there in the northwest corner of the state, being able to talk about broadband and having led the effort to expand broadband throughout Indiana, that continues to be a top priority. And then listening to Hoosiers, quite honestly, they're struggling today with the high cost of living, inflation, and you know, what's going on. It costs $11,000 more today than it did 3 years ago just to meet basic household needs. And so Hoosiers are very concerned about that and how we're able to help them in the future, being able to put more money back into their pockets. It's the things that are of utmost importance to them. And then what I hear, surprisingly, Dee, as Secretary of Agriculture, when I'm traveling around Indiana, Hoosiers are really concerned about who is buying up our land, and particularly our farmland. And so the Indiana State Department of Agriculture, an agency I oversee as Secretary of Agriculture, is actually undertaking a study right now assessing all the lost farmland from 2010 through 2022. That report is due to the General Assembly by July 1. But I've also instructed them to look at the economic impact of that lost farmland. And then I want to know, as I'm sure Hoosiers want to know, is who is buying up that lost farmland. And it better not be China or adversaries to the United States of America. And the bill was passed this past session that prohibits farmland being sold to our adversaries and land near our military bases. And as you know, as President of the Senate and as Lieutenant Governor, in the last budget session, I was able to get funding in the budget to purchase 3,900 acres of land that butts right up to Crane Naval Warfare Center to be able to protect that military site from foreign adversaries buying up land, spying on our military, and being able to steal our secrets. And that, quite honestly, is something that a lot of Hoosiers talk about when I'm on the road.
Suzanne Crouch is the Lieutenant Governor for the state of Indiana. Lieutenant Governor Crouch, again, thank you so much for joining us on Regionally Speaking, and we look forward to having you back with us soon.
And hope to be with you soon, Dee. Take care.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. Lakeshore Public Media's television broadcast, Lakeshore PBS, will present the new season of the Emmy-nominated series, The Whitney Reynolds Show, on Monday, April 8th at 6:30 p.m. The Whitney Reynolds Show is a topic-based talk show that is driven by positive change through real-life issues. The Whitney Reynolds Show has been widely recognized for its outstanding content, garnering numerous accolades over the years, including 5 Telly Awards and 2 Emmy nominations. Season 7 of the show aims to build on this success, offering viewers even greater entertainment value and substance.
The Whitney Reynolds Show is recognized for its commitment to delivering enriching television programming, positioning itself as a prominent provider of insightful programming. In the upcoming season, this tradition continues, providing audiences with a unique platform to explore a wide range of topics, including personal and professional development, health, relationships, and social issues. Episodes such as Forgotten City, Dreamcatchers, A Moment in Time, Midlife Moment, Everyday Detectives, and Social Entrepreneurs showcase the diverse theme awaiting viewers' engagement. Whitney Reynolds is the host, executive producer, and chief inspo officer of The Whitney Reynolds Show. Whitney began growing the show at the age of 25 by launching Whitney Reynolds Media. In 2012, the show changed its initial concentration and moved to the PBS platform. The Whitney Reynolds Show is an independently owned television show that ran for nearly 10 seasons before the show was picked up for national syndication. The show aired nationally through PBS on January 6, 2021, with Lakeshore PBS as the presenting station. Joining us now to give us a glimpse of Season 7 is Whitney Reynolds herself. Whitney, as always, thank you so much for joining us here on Regionally Speaking.
Dee, I am so happy to be here as we're welcoming the world to Season 7 of The Whitney Reynolds Show.
So Whitney, as you just shared, Whitney, you will premiere Season 7 of your nationally syndicated talk show, The Whitney Reynolds Show, on Monday, April 8th, including right here on Lakeshore PBS. Whitney, you are the self-described chief inspo officer, and I'm sure this season promises to be engaging, thought-provoking, and of course, heartfelt. Whitney, I know you've shared this on many platforms before, but for members of our listening audience that may be new to you, take a moment to tell your origin story. And I want you to share this because I understand that for as long as you could remember, you always knew that you would be on television, right?
Mm-hmm, Dee. And you are nailing it right on the head right now. I was going to tell you, every time I chat with you, with your name being Dee, I think back to my childhood because my nickname was Dee Dee because my little sister couldn't say Whitney. And so much of my story and how I got to where I am and the stories that we tell on the show really developed from that little girl in Southern Oklahoma that had this vision. There is not a day in my life that I don't remember wanting to be on TV and knowing I would do it. In fact, it was really interesting because my birthday, April 3rd, is a day that a lot of people send notes, you know, on social media. And one of my elementary school teachers said, "You said you were going to do this from the time you were in my class in second grade." And, wow. You know, there, when other girls were dressing up as Barbies, I was dressing up as Sally Jesse Raphael. And those glasses were a big hit back in the day. I would just borrow my mom's glasses. Probably didn't help my vision, but I would slap on those glasses and start interviewing people with a tennis ball taped to an empty paper towel holder. And I love people and I love their stories. But, you know, I went through something in my childhood and it's not fully out there yet. It will be because I'm connecting the dots this season. You'll see that our season opener starts dipping my toe more into why I tell the stories I do. But I went through something very challenging in my childhood. And Dee, that really instilled this empathy. And so instead of just television and this idea of being a talk show and just around pop culture or anything like that, what I went through gave me this heart for letting people know there are inspiration in the tough moments and that we will get through these tough chapters. And that's where the Whitney Reynolds Show heart and soul truly beat. It's in these stories of hope. And, you know, they're not all sad because I got some feedback and they're like, "Oh my gosh, you tell such hard stories." And we do tell hard stories, but there are beautiful moments too in these uplifting chapters. And so that's really where we go. We really want to honor people and the fact that their story matters. And that is our mission. And as we bring you Season 7, that's exactly what we're doing. We're kicking off things with faces of change, cities that have felt abandoned and people that are rebuilding them. These faces are strong faces that are saying, "Hey, we're dedicated to what's going on." and humanity. And so that's really where we kick things off on Monday. And you mentioned that Lakeshore PBS actually debuts our whole nation kickoff. Lakeshore is our presenting station, and everybody that sees it on Lakeshore PBS gets to see it first, and then it hits the nation right after that and the PBS app as well.
Whitney, what you just shared leads me to my next question. So I want to piggyback on that. So you have this unique ability to interview your guests in a way that not many have mastered. You are empathetic, and you always find the silver lining for each conversation. Included in the tagline to your show, The Whitney Reynolds Show, is Your Story Matters. And in that, you work to promote inclusion, invoke motivation, and drive social and individual change. The Whitney Reynolds Show is supported by interviews with celebrities, experts, but also everyday people. Now, you gave us a little hint earlier, but tell us more about what we can expect from the show this season.
Yeah, you know, we dig deep. It doesn't matter if we're interviewing someone from across town or in another state or a celebrity that has this amazing movie out. It doesn't matter what they hold their title to be. It is the depth of their story that inspires our viewers that we look for. And what I've realized with most stories is the common chord is that we're really not that much different. We live in a society that tells us all the time, we're so different, the world is on fire, all these things are happening. And what we're discovering on this show is, yeah, there's tough stuff we're going to face. I mean, we're human, right? We all bleed red. But at the end of the day, we have this intertwining of stories that really do matter. And when we take time to learn from one another, we realize, hey, we've all been through things and we all have inspiration in those. And so this season, we know, I said, we kick things off with the Faces of Change, and then we go to Dream Catchers. And Dream Catchers are these amazing individuals that have this ability to dream in a way. I mean, from the Broadway stage to a chef that a lot of people know, Chef Art Smith. We're talking about his dream and how he's connecting. And then there's this guy. And if you have not heard of Peter Kaden, oh my gosh. Folks Chicago is, they are giving college away for free. And I say that, and that is not an understatement. For someone that had to take out student loans and really understand what college costs and how I was going to do it, what he's doing for these under-resourced neighborhoods, he's going in and looking these kids in the eyes and saying, you have potential, we see it, and we're going to make it happen. And he's on that show. That's one you don't want to miss. We, you know, we hit every Monday. So we kick things off on the 8th, and then the following Monday, you'll see a new show. And so then we go to a moment in time. We were with the NASCAR racers when they raced the city for the first time. That was amazing. To a guy that was trying to impress his first girlfriend on a date and lit a candle too close to a propane tank, and his whole life changed. But that flame sparked something in him that I tell you, me just telling his story on the surface like I am right now doesn't give it this is one of those stories that you will want to watch again and save, because Connor McKimmy, he is really using what he went through to change the world. Like, he sparked change through the fire that impacted him. And so those are our first three shows, but we keep going with Midlife Movement, Everyday Detectives, Positive Purpose. You know, the season kickoff this season, because we do tape in Lawndale in Chicago, we tape at CineCity, we really wanted to double down with the neighborhood that we tape in and let people know that we see their story and we see the hope and they're not forgotten, because that's the whole theme of the first show. So we are doing a preview party with the North Lawndale College Prep Academy. Wow. And that's going to be on Friday with their students. And we are so excited to bring them this new season early and let them know, like, hey, you're seen and we believe in what you're doing. And then on Monday when we kick things off, that's really when everything opens up, because the nation will get to see these stories of hope.
Wow, Whitney, I love the intentionality behind you screening season 7 of The Whitney Reynolds Show in the neighborhood of which you actually filmed the show, at a school
in Greater Chicagoland, in the Lawndale community. I'm pretty sure that the entire community, including the students, are so excited to have you in their building. Now, Wendy, you did an excellent job of giving us a preview of some of the episodes for season 7 of the Whitney Reynolds Show. But there's one that really caught my attention, and that's the episode 4, I believe it is, Midlife Movement. And it caught my eye, particularly because of the description that talks about this whole midlife transition, right? It's about midlife transition. It's about personal journey, right? And it caught my eye because your guest will speak to a topic that has been sort of making its way around the news right now, and that's midlife transition.
Abby Tuff, I just want to tell you about her. She is, okay. She's making waves on social media. This is another show. This one's very, very personal. I'm dipping my toe into my dot point, mm-hmm. and it will yep. be there eventually. There's multiple authors in my story that all have to be okay with when we do connect the dots for our viewers of why I tell the stories I do. But Gabby Tuft is one that's very, very personal for me. A former WWE wrestler, and she made a whole life pivot. And when I say that, she transitioned and let people come along her journey in her transition and the hard moments and now identifying as Gabby. That interview is one that touched my soul because she's completely vulnerable and she does it on social media every day, but really went there for us in the studio. In fact, it was one of those moments where I had to take off my microphone for a second and wow. go take a breather. And it's a life-changing interview in multiple ways. And Kathleena, the allergy chef, she is another one that we found on Instagram that drove all the way from California because she can't be around people or even drink normal water. She has so many allergies. And I don't want to say the wrong number, but around 100 different allergies of what she's allergic to. She wears a respirator all the time. Like she told me when she was getting some of the stuff for our cooking segment, said, Whitney, I kind of got judged when I walked into the store because I'm wearing this and people are thinking I'm just scared maybe of COVID or scared of, I don't know. But she goes, but this is really what saves my life. And so her story is one that, you know, she almost died until she identified what was actually hurting her when it came to food allergies. And now she's creating these recipes for others and children and making people know that they can really love the food they have and it can be safe. And she actually, that's a show that I welcome the viewers in my home because of her condition, we actually the safest place to tape based on even having to wipe the counters with a certain type of paper towel with hot water was my home. Wow. So we did everything to prep my home for her. And that is another show that is just truly amazing.
Well, that is pretty amazing. And it gives us more of a reason to look forward to your new season. Now, Whitney, again, this Monday, April 8th, you will premiere season 7 of your nationally syndicated show. Over the years, you have addressed some truly touching, tough, and sometimes life-altering topics. How do you come up with new topics to discuss? And to that point, do you consider the impact that each guest will have on your audience?
So we have hit this wonderful stride as a show. And I will go back to the fact that Lakeshore and PBS networks around the nation are carrying our program and really digging deep with hope, recognizing that people need this. They need to see stories and be reminded that their stories and their delicate chapters matter. But it's one of those things that since we went national in 2021, we have amazing people from everywhere. And I say everywhere because last season we had someone from Australia right. and he flew in and he's known as that autism guy. Super interesting how people have these different titles and we honor the titles they give us to say, but we weren't calling him that autism guy. Right. That's what he actually goes by. Wow. And he flew in from Australia and he pitched us. He said, I have this story. And as this person that wants to tell it, I see your stage being a great place and a safe place to tell it. So we are at a place in our show's history where we have amazing submissions. And we take that very serious when it comes to the research side of who we're booking. You know, we are not a nonprofit, Dee, and we do recognize that so many people just want to be seen and want to be heard. And every pitch that comes through does get a response from someone on our team that says, you are seen, you are heard. We don't have the capacity to tell every story. And really, in order to be on the Whitney Reynolds Show, there has to be that here's how I got through it. That is one of our key ingredients for the stories we tell. However, when people pitch us and they might be in the thick of it and there's not a how I got through it yet, we do remind them story after story that we tell here on the show, you will get through it and there you will make it and your story does matter. And so that's really as we're going into producing, believe it or not, season 8 for the fall, we're producing that right now. Wow. We are getting amazing submissions and we are seeing people exactly where they are with these big stories. And then what we do when we get these pitches, we say, okay, how do we maybe tell someone in Australia's story with someone from Texas, or what's the bigger theme here? And that's really what we're doing as we're telling these stories. We've taped with some amazing guests already for the fall, from Cincinnati to Oklahoma. We're telling these stories.
Whitney, during our last conversation, when you joined me here in studio, I asked you what inspires you. You know, who or what serves as a catalyst for you to continue to follow your dreams, to be your own boss, to host and executive produce a talk show bearing your name? This time, I want to end our conversation by asking you this. What are you most grateful for?
You know, as I said, I had a birthday this year, and the closer I get to 40, the closer I'm realizing it's not my title of my show. It's not being recognized when I'm at dinner. It's not about the fame. It's not about that I'm a twin mom. It's not even about that. It is about understanding my gift here on earth and applying that to all areas of my life. And when I look at my kids, I know that, hey, the next generation matters. The kids that we are raising up, what their little eyeballs are seeing, the stories we are telling truly matter. To be at a place in my life where we have a stage in this connecting the dots for this mission, that is huge. And the fact that it's recognized that the world needs that is greater, is beyond me. And so to be a vessel for change and to be that voice of hope forever, it doesn't matter if it's on PBS, meaning like if people are getting that voice of hope from my TV show or they're getting it from the bread aisle, because I love people and I love stories and I want people to know that there is hope in their chapters. And that is what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful that I recognize my God-given gift and I'm running with it.
Wow, Whitney, that is a wonderful way for us to end our time together today. Whitney Reynolds is the executive producer, host, and chief inspo officer of the Telly Award-winning and Emmy-nominated Whitney Reynolds Show. The season 7 premieres this Monday, April 8th, on Lakeshore PBS. Whitney, again, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Regionally Speaking, and we look forward to seeing your premiere on Monday.
Thank you so much, Steve.
The nationally syndicated Whitney Reynolds Show will premiere Monday, April 8th at 6:30 p.m. on Lakeshore PBS, which broadcasts on Channel 56 over the air, as well as on DirecTV, Dish Network, and AT&T UVerse. Comcast Xfinity users can find Lakeshore PBS on Channel 17 or 21, while RCN viewers can tune in to Channel 44. Lakeshore's radio and television broadcasts can be streamed online at www.lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And welcome back to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. Last year, only 48% of high school seniors filled out the free application for federal student aid nationally, leaving millions of dollars on the table. Many people believe they won't qualify for financial aid because their parents make too much money or there isn't aid for adult students. But the truth is, with so many types of aid, most students receive some. In fact, Indiana is one of the most generous states in the nation for need-based funding. Bill Wozniak, the Vice President of Communications and Student Services with Invested, joins us now to discuss some of the financial aid questions, including how his organization helps to break down some of the myths and facts of post-secondary education funding, as well as share how students can get free financial aid help before the April 15th application deadline. Bill, as always, thank you so much for joining us here on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Bill, you know, we're speaking about financial aid. We have a deadline coming up, but I need you to help us to all understand here in Northwest Indiana. So what is the FAFSA form and how does it help with financial aid?
The free application for federal student aid, the FAFSA, is, I think, somewhat poorly named because it has in the title for federal student aid, but it really is for all types of financial aid. Federal student aid, state of Indiana financial aid, and financial aid from the schools, the institutions themselves. So the FAFSA really is the gateway into all financial aid for post-secondary ed.
You said that the name that you believe that it's misleading or it's actually mislabeled, but I have a question for you. Does Indiana provide significant need-based aid for students?
Very significant. Indiana is very generous, hundreds of millions of dollars every year. And so these dollars that are out there is how the 21st Century Scholars Grant and the O'Bannon Grant, these dollars are funded with this money. And so when you are a student, you file the FAFSA and you get the federal money, the Indiana grant programs are significant. And so that's why we don't want anyone to skip filing the FAFSA and potentially missing out on those dollars.
When you mentioned missing out on those potential dollars, you know, studies have shown that millions upon millions of dollars are left at the table. Now, Bill, high school seniors in Indiana are now required to fill out that form. What is the best way for students to complete the form? Because we've heard in the news that there have been some complications. So what is the best way to complete that form?
The best way, ideally, is the family goes to the federal student aid site, the FAFSA page. They go in, it's a federal form, they click, and they go in and file it. Ideally, that's how it happens. But as you just mentioned, this is a year with a lot of glitches. Normally, people have some questions anyway about some of the asset questions, some of the things of that nature. So people have questions normally, but this year with some glitches and the form sticking, they have even more because the family thinks they're the only one having the trouble, and that's just not the case. It's a lot of people across the country. So if you can go in and get it filed and you have no questions, that's the best case. But if not, our team is standing by. We're a nonprofit, experts available completely free, and our phone number is 317-715-9007. And people just call up and our team is sitting here and just happy to get you answers and get you across the finish line with the form.
Bill, I have to ask you a question because we're speaking about a very important form for all high school seniors as well as students that are in college right now. What are some of the biggest myths about the cost of college and financial aid?
Two biggest myths. Number one, I'm going to have to pay sticker price. I'm going to have to pay what's called the cost of attendance. That is the big number. We're so used to going to the grocery store and you grab a loaf of bread and it is going to cost $2 or $3 and you get to the checkout and it's $2 or $3. Well, that's not really how post-secondary ed works. You see a sticker price, you see a number, but then what you really should end up paying is what's called the net price. So people get scared by the sticker price, but they really are going to pay the net price if they file the FAFSA. So people don't understand what they would really pay. And that's the big one there. And number two, kind of aligned with that, people call us every day saying, I am not going to get financial aid. I am not going to get any grants, scholarships, anything. And in most cases, that's wrong. And so those are the two biggest myths.
Wow, and I'm so glad that you pointed out. Now, you shared just a moment ago that you have members of your organization that are standing by ready to take the call. How can families reach out if they want to speak directly with an Indiana-based financial aid expert one-on-one?
That's it. So two things on our website, investedindiana.org, investedindiana.org. There is a contact us page and there's an email address there as well. And you can just, you know, reach out to us that way or call us at 317-715-9007. They are friendly. It is experts. They're right here in Indiana and we're taking calls every single day. And as we get closer to April 15th, the calls only increase and we're just happy to help anyone with their questions about paying for post-secondary education.
Bill, before I let you go, I have to ask you, because as you just pointed out, that April 15th deadline is quickly approaching. Where can our listeners go to learn more?
Investedindiana.org is just filled with pages and pages about everything we just talked about. There's pages and pages on our website, and then a whole bunch of links for those that want to go deeper and deeper into each of these topics. So that's great. And as you just mentioned, April 15th, it is the state of Indiana priority deadline for financial aid. So if you file by April 15, you will get the aid that you're eligible for. But after April 15, it's not guaranteed. So we don't want anyone to miss April 15.
Bill Wozniak is the Vice President of Communications and Student Services with Invested. Bill, thank you so much for joining us here on Regionally Speaking, sharing this important information that will help all of our college-bound students.
Thank you, as always, for the opportunity.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guest, and we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.